Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Welcome to Tuesday's edition of the Three Martini Lunch. One good martini for conservatives, one not so good, and one just plain crazy. And today, we're going to shake up the order a little bit, put our waiter on his toes, and order the bad martini first, because it's the big news that broke overnight. Jim, it was just a couple of weeks ago that you and I, in the crazy martini, were talking about whether or not, you know, North Korea might have possibly had something to do with that mystery missile or contrail or whatever it was off the coast of California a couple of weeks ago. And now we wake up to the news that North Korea, for the second time this year, being belligerent towards South Korea and causing multiple deaths of our South Korean allies.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're skipping martinis, Greg. I'm going straight to the emergency ration water in the fortified bunker. When I was thinking about this as I was reading the news this morning, this seems like a really big deal. Having said that, it seems like every couple of months we get some unbelievably provocative and outrageous act by the Kim Jong-il and the North Korean regime. It's in the news for a day or two, and that just seems like we all forget about it. And I don't know whether this is, you know, Groundhog Day, or they feel like they've made their point and gotten a concession, or trying to get into the head of Kim Jong-il is probably kind of like looking for Shangri-La or something. I mean, you know, for this long-lost, faraway land that may or may not exist. So what the North Koreans really want is hard to grasp, but this basically seems like a direct act of war, just firing artillery shells, killing soldiers. Every civilian had to go down into bunkers, and I understand South Koreans are at alert. Hopefully this is calming down, and by the time this reaches the listeners out there, we don't have to talk about, you know, some horrible new escalation of things out there. But I just feel like we're in this bizarre cycle in which something, you know, the North Koreans do something horrifically provocative. We tut-tut, we hear some sort of very stern comment from our commander-in-chief, and then we just, you know, the diplomats meet, and it doesn't seem like anything really serious happens there.
Yeah, it's the attention span, not only of our leaders, it seems like sometimes, due to how little they talk about threats like this in public, but also, you know, us in the public, where something like this happens, and we're like, oh yeah, there is a problem still in North Korea. We still do have a maniac who's completely unreliable, who wants to build a nuclear program, and oh yeah, is about to give it over to his son, who will probably be in charge there for decades to come, unless there's a major change. So the urgency, or lack of urgency here, is really what's troubling, I think.
I guess the only possibility I can think of is that the national media has stopped asking about the, you know, how do we handle North Korea, because it's very clear the administration has no good answers on how we handle North Korea.
Well, a lot of people say the last administration didn't really either. There were more talks. There were more steps that seemed towards North Korea doing what we wanted them to do. And then in the end, of course, when it came time to do it, they didn't do it. So we're pretty much back at square one. And really, the last three administrations have been trying to find an answer here, and no one's really done a good job of it.
Concur. Hopefully this will end up in a non-radioactive solution. But I will keep my radioactive listening for, hey, you know, mushroom clouds over the peninsula or something. I perhaps exaggerate slightly, but this is just, you know, at some point this is going to be not just a three-day story. And something will happen that will leave the South Koreans little option to strike back very heavily. I was kind of struck to see Glenn Reynolds of Instapundit openly talking about, like, using many, many nuclear weapons to solve the problem, which is not what I usually expect to see on Instapundit every morning, you know.
Right, that's true. And we'll see what the U.S. and the South Korean response is. So far, pretty much all we've seen out of the Obama administration is that it strongly condemns the North Korean actions. Well, thanks for that. We'll see what other type of leadership they have here on this issue. But let's move on to the good martini now, because we do have one. In fact, we can almost make this a multiple one. But the big news in those House recounts, we talked about this on Monday, is that we do have another Republican win, despite an effort by a Democrat to win through the recount process down in Texas' 27th congressional district. Longtime Democrat Solomon Ortiz defeated by Republican Blake Farenthold. In the end, his lead was about 800 votes. Solomon Ortiz paid for this whole long recount, and he ended up winning by pretty much the same margin.
Yeah, at least my understanding is he put down the deposit to pay for the expenses of the recount. And my sense is when it's a close race and it's a couple hundred votes, I can't begrudge a guy wanting to make sure that, you know, that the result really is the result. I think it's rather revealing that it didn't really change, unlike some other places where we've seen as in the Tim Bishop, Randy Altshuler race up in New York. It seems like every time I turn around, you know, right, it's neck and neck, and somebody's going from up one to down two, and you can drive yourself crazy watching the back and forth lead flips over there. I think it's significant to see a Republican knocking off a Latino Democrat in a majority Latino district, which makes two Hispanic Democrats knocked off in Texas, along with Ciro Rodriguez. And the other kind of intriguing thing, which just kind of jumps out, is that this was a rough year if your name was Solomon Ortiz, because not only Congressman Luz, but his son, a state legislator named Solomon Ortiz Jr., also lost his race, which was settled back on Election Day. So, Greg, I see a kind of a grim, tense, awkward conversation over the Thanksgiving dinner table at the Ortiz household this weekend.
I think there might be even more awkward one in Nevada, because how would you like to be Rory Reed, knowing that your dad's the entire reason, or at least a big reason, why you lost your governor's race, and then your dad didn't even lose at the same time?
That's a good point. I think, you know, Harry might be able to say, you know, Rory, I won my race. You're a big disappointment to me, son.
Good times in the Reed household. Let's move on to martini number three now. And we call this the crazy and the bizarre martini. This might take the cake for the most bizarre one we've ever had, because as the reports are coming out of this NATO conference, it turns out now that this Taliban quote-unquote figure that's been negotiating with the allies, with NATO, with Hamid Karzai, not the guy we thought he was, just a complete imposter as far as we can tell. We thought he was this Mullah Akhtar Muhammad Mansour, and go figure, he's not.
You know, I saw that news, Greg, and thought, I can't believe they're making a sequel to Borat. And when we find out this is Sacha Baron Cohen in his most elaborate costume ever, I guess on the one hand, this is probably very bad news. It makes, you know, NATO look very foolish to get taken in by an impersonator. And apparently the other guys at the table were saying to the NATO commanders, we don't recognize him. He doesn't look right. What happened to him? But if you're like me, I kind of am just skeptical of the whole notion of negotiating with the Taliban. I'm not really sure we can trust these guys. It feels like a really big moral compromise. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know what exactly we talk about with them, whether they throw a slightly less caustic acid when they're disfiguring a girl going to school.
Right.
A big embarrassment like this of negotiating with some guy who wandered in off the street claiming to be a Taliban leader, I think just may dissuade people this is a good idea, that you can actually get somewhere from negotiating with the Taliban when the Taliban themselves don't even show up. And now there's speculation as to whether this guy was just a con man or some sort of Taliban agent, or whether he was ISI, the Pakistani Intelligence Service. All kinds of different options for who this guy is, none of them good for the prospect of these negotiations.
Yeah,
so
the fact
if you think this was a bad idea, this is actually potentially a bit of good news, although it does leave NATO with quite a bit of egg on its face.
Yeah, it's bizarre enough that he wasn't who he said he was. We still can't even figure out who he really is. And I guess this all goes to show that the vetting process, which apparently overlooked, you know, all the tax problems a couple of years ago with the Obama cabinet figures, apparently getting worse, not better. We can't,
you know,
even, we can't even confirm identity
can
anymore.
The Taliban. It's a sign of just what an insecure world we live in, Greg.
Exactly. Who can you trust these days? Jim, very good. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus for Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.